How many of you know George Carlin, the comedian George Carlin? He's, don't want to surprise you, but he's probably one of my favorite comedians. Actually, George Carlin and Robin Williams are both in a similar kind of category for me. Robin Williams, by the way, you might not know, is an Episcopalian. George Carlin grew up Roman Catholic. He grew up in a church called Corpus Christi in Manhattan. He was really formed and shaped there. They had an excellent elementary school, I understand, where he received a great education. He eventually went on to Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx, where he eventually was asked to leave. When I was teaching high school in the Bronx in the early 80s, there was a priest who had retired, who lived in the residence I was living in, who taught George Carlin and said how he was a brilliant kid, just couldn't handle the rules too well. And was asked to leave. Interestingly, the Church of Corpus Christi, where he was formed and shaped, is also the church where, how many know Thomas Merton, the great mystic spiritual writer of the 20th century? That's the same parish where he experienced his conversion and his transformation in his life. So this church in Corpus Christi, Church of Corpus Christi in Manhattan, Thomas Merton, George Carlin, quite a group of people shaped by that community. George Carlin has a reputation of commenting on life, on society, culture, politics, and religion. Religion is not something he is afraid of talking about. I wish he were alive today to comment on our times today. I just would love to hear his take on that. But there's a story. The reason I say all this is there's a story that George Carlin shares in his routine that has to do with religion, and I want to share it with you. There's a reason I'm sharing it with you, but I first want to tell it to you. It's a story he's telling about from his Roman Catholic background. In the routine, he's saying that he's a child, and the priest comes into class to teach a class, and he is like the little kid in the classroom trying to catch the priest in a question. And he picks up on in the Roman Catholic tradition, there was this requirement that between Ash Wednesday and Pentecost, so the Lent and Easter season, one was required to go to communion and also then go to confession. It was called one's Easter duty. So George Carlin tells his routine. I want to make sure I read it as he says it. He says this like as a little kid with a New York accent. I mean, I'm trying to imitate a New York accent. I have a New York accent, but let me try to get a little bit of George Carlin's thing. He says, "So Father," he says, "suppose you didn't make your Easter duty, and it's Pentecost Sunday, the last day, and you're on a ship at sea, and the chaplain goes into a coma. But you wanted to receive. And then it's Monday. Too late. But then you cross the international date line. Would that then be a sin there, Father?" That's what he tells the routine. It's called the international date line story if you're a George Carlin fan. Why do I bring that up? Because I think that's the gospel reading this morning. When I read that gospel reading, to me, the Sadducees are that little boy that George Carlin is sort of imitating. The Sadducees are coming to Jesus to question him on something. And in the Jewish tradition among the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. So challenging Jesus in this instance. And there was a custom in the Jewish tradition where if a woman was married to a man and he died, that man's brother would then marry her. The idea was to carry on the lineage, the children. And so what the Sadducees are saying is it's almost like the little boy from George Carlin. So Jesus. So a woman marries. Her husband dies. And his brother marries her. Then he dies. Then his brother marries her. And he dies. They carry this through seven times. Seven brothers have married her. Therefore, they say to Jesus, so when they go to heaven, who's her husband? And Jesus takes this question and really calls them to something much deeper. He calls them to transcend this kind of way of understanding their religious tradition to see something much more, and he challenges them. Religion can sometimes become like that. Religion can oftentimes be perceived by folks as being just these different rules and regulations, and different religions have different ones, and just kind of a, religion is about just obeying those things and doing those things, and they can lose their sense of what's the meaning behind them. There's someone that I've been influenced over the last few years by. I discovered him a few years ago. His name is Brian McLaren, and he is a teacher, a preacher. He is someone who, interestingly, is kind of, you would describe perhaps in the religious world as liberal and yet evangelical. He's kind of got these both, those two things you don't always put together. But he comes with this rich way of seeing church life, and he reflects on it, and he's written books on it, and he's taught things on it. He spoke a few years ago at the National Cathedral in Washington, had an opportunity to hear his presentation, and there's something that he shared in that I'd like to share with you this morning. Brian McLaren makes the distinction, and this isn't his original thought, but the distinction between religion and spirituality. Perhaps you've heard this before, this kind of distinction of religion and spirituality. Brian McLaren suggests that the church is in a whole new world. We're in a new environment. People out there, use that phrase, are not necessarily looking for, like, well, I sure wish I could become an Episcopalian. Or I sure wish I could become a Lutheran. Or I sure wish I could become a Baptist. People are not necessarily asking those questions. But what they are doing, which to me is part of the human journey, the human quest, is they're wondering, what is this all about? What is it all about? At the end of the day, I do what I do, I live my life, what's it all about? What's the meaning of our lives? Brian McLaren considers that the spiritual quest, the spiritual journey, the question we all ask ourselves. And people are looking for meaning in their lives, and that really is the spiritual quest. And yet sometimes we in religious traditions can somehow wonder, well, why aren't those people coming here? And Brian McLaren is suggesting that we tend to look out there as if there's something wrong with them. Perhaps we need to reflect on ourselves, are we engaged in somehow responding to what the search is about in our world today? And what Brian McLaren suggests in this presentation he gave to the National Cathedral is that, and he's not an Episcopalian, but he feels that the Episcopal Church, the Anglican tradition, has this richness to it, in a sense, has the tools to respond to that. And yet why, he suggests, if you read the articles in the news and the papers, why is the Episcopal Church and many other denominations on a decline in terms of membership? When he's suggesting we have an opportunity before us. And he says that opportunity has to do with a phrase you've heard many times, but I want to tell you his take on it, has to do with the via media. The via media. Perhaps you've heard that phrase. It's the middle way. The middle way. It's one of the great gifts of the Anglican tradition of which we've inherited. He suggests that we live in a dualistic world. We live in a world of this or that, either or. And yet we need to be challenged to live in a non-dualistic world, which is not the easiest thing in the world to do. But he gives this idea. If you could picture this with me. Here's A, and there's a line going across to B. A, B. A, conservative. B, liberal. Republican, Democrat. Progressive, traditional, poor, rich, right, left, right, wrong, right, wrong. You know, if you're A, you tend to look at B. perhaps as being wrong. If you're B, you tend to look at A as being wrong. And whatever those dichotomies are, you don't have to agree with those particular ones. You may have some in your own mind. But the traditional way of understanding the via media is if that's A and that's B, perhaps the via media is C, somewhere here in the center. And somehow we find this way to a center place. This idea that each side kind of begins to move towards each other and the other side moves towards each other. But he suggests that that's not necessarily the via media. And this is the point that I found engaging. I hope you do. He says that if this is A and this is B, the real via media is not C, but X. That the via media is this including but transcending. This including but transcending. This being who we are, taking who we are, taking it with us, but being open to a new place, to a new understanding. In many ways, that's the via media. And his teaching is he believes our world needs this. This kind of new understanding, this ability to both include and transcend. Suggesting our nation could benefit from that, and the church could too. I mean, churches think in these same terms because the church is not something out there. We're the church. We live in this culture. We live in this place. And the way we think sometimes has to be challenged in a new way. I found that engaging. I'm not sure I've explained it as well as he did, but the thinking really, really challenged me. And I think as we move forward as St. Paul's, I think there are areas of our parish life where we're able to do this, and we are doing it. And there's other areas where we can grow in it, I think, as well. Today, as our annual meeting was between the 9 o'clock and 11:15 services, this morning I want to just share some thoughts about our parish, about our faith community, as where we are and perhaps where we're going, and kind of use that idea of this idea of including and transcending, this idea of moving to become ever more. It's not something we're ever finished doing, but it's something we're always engaged in our lives as we move forward. This past year in our parish life has been quite a year. Quite a year of transition. A lot of staff transition. Some staff transition we knew about in the beginning of the year, and much of it that we didn't know in the beginning of the year. But the thing that I have found most interesting is, and this was someone pointed this out to me the other day, that while there's been all this staff transition that's been going on, what I have found intriguing is folks from our parish community sharing their gifts and stepping forward to continue to support and nurture the ministry that they're involved in. The ministries continue. The staff who are there to support, to serve, to provide leadership with the leaders of those ministries, to be able to, that position maybe has changed, but people have stepped forward. And it's just a wonder to watch the gifts that have come forward to lead. Youth ministry. Our youth ministry is going through a transition this year. And the thing that I have been really taken with are the people who have stepped forward, not stepped forward, but even have been part of the youth ministry, who have stepped up to provide even more of a leadership. When we had the diocese come to meet with our youth ministry, a couple folks said to me they expected to come and meet maybe three or four people, which is the typical adult gathering you'll find of a parish working with youth ministry, but they walked into a room of 21 adults, and they were pretty taken by that. I turned to them, I said, that's the significance of youth ministry in this parish. Those number of adults involved in it was an incredible sign. The key thing of our youth ministry are our youth. As I've shared with you before in other homilies, they call us to something. They lead us to something new. They invite us in some ways to transcend to new things. I shared that about the Appalachian Service Project a few weeks back. The committee that we have in youth ministry is strong and continues to gather and lead that ministry. And we called forth Leah Dale to be an interim youth coordinator. And Leah is the staff person
who's supporting those folks, the youth, the committee, the adults, supporting that ministry as it goes forward. And we're in the midst also of, I know youth committee meets on Tuesday, and I'm hoping to be at that meeting as well. And we begin to talk about what we're looking for as we move forward. Whenever we have a position that changes or leaves, it's a chance to sit down and say, okay, what do we need now going forward? So we want to discern that. And our plan is to decide in 2014, you know, what a permanent position is going to look like. What kind of a permanent youth position do we need here at St. Paul's? And so that, that process needs to continue. In the preschool, we have, I think, a great preschool, and the teachers over there are committed. They have a passion for that preschool, a passion for the children. And we have gathered with the preschool teachers numerous times. We've gathered with parents of children over there to get input as to what our preschool needs are. And we've put together a job description, and we have posted the preschool director position. As a matter of fact, there's information in your bulletin today about that. And we're receiving applications for that. Our hope is to have that position filled very soon. And I want to thank Laura Gorman, who has been our interim preschool director at the preschool. Laura has been our kids club director, coordinating our child care in our kids club. And she stepped up to take on this role of interim preschool director. I want to thank her for that. And also thank Christine Ingram for the leadership that she has provided, both as our parish administrator and also as the director of children's ministry. She has really been engaged with that preschool process as well. And I know how much I appreciate Christine and her new role as well as parish administrator, supported by Brandy Satterfield, who is a part-time a financial assistant, a CPA who helps support the financial area, and also Kristen McGee, who supports the children's ministry as a part-time interim children's ministry assistant. So there's lots of changes there as well, and I think we're moving in a good direction. Also thank Brooke Bowersox, too, a person who's helping over in the preschool in a part-time way as well. In the area of music, this is a new transition for us. We have a strong music program. We have a vast music program, one of the largest programs in our parish. And it's significant to us, important to us. And we've invited Carl Clark to be our interim music minister. Carl's not able to be here today. Carl is somebody, just so you know, who was an ordained United Church of Christ minister. He has his Master's of Divinity from Duke Divinity School. He was received into the Episcopal Church a few years ago. Actually, I met with him, and we got to meet, and I mentored him, taught him, whatever word you want to use. He was received into the Episcopal Church a few years ago. And he is just finishing up his work as a CPE supervisor training program, a clinical pastoral education training program. He is qualified to supervise folks who are chaplains, do pastoral care in hospitals. And he's away this weekend actually defending his dissertation that he had to do. So he's finishing that up. So he has joined us, and he also is a musician. And he has joined us as our interim music director. And I'm glad he is with us to do that. Also, Susan Gilbert continues working with our Jubilate Choir, being the person who's supporting and serving and leading that 9 o'clock service as well. We also formed a music committee, which actually formed a few months ago. Did a lot of work on certain areas of music, did some work on the upcoming budget, but that music committee is now a group that will be really key and essential, I think, to us moving forward. They're meeting today, and we're going to be putting together a process to begin looking to move forward to discern a permanent music minister, and hopefully in 2014 be able to put that in place. So there's a lot of, in the area of staffing, there's a lot of transition, and each of those areas of ministry are in different stages of the process of discerning going forward. But our intention is to find permanent positions and use this time to determine what they need to look like. In adult ed continues to get stronger. This year we have offerings every Sunday. That was part of the visioning process having a stronger adult ed program. And every Sunday we have an offering up in the chapel. We've had, Carr and I have done a couple, and we've had Jeff Hensley, who was a seminary professor, give some classes. And we've had reports on a pilgrimage that was taken. There's so many opportunities. We have some very good ones upcoming as well. Keep track of our bulletin and our website. That's every Sunday. Plus, we have a gospel study going on every Sunday as well, plus classes that are going on at different times of the year. I did one a few weeks ago on some Tuesday evenings. So that's moving on as well. In the area of outreach, one of the things that came out of our visioning process was a desire for hands-on outreach, this idea of connecting with those that we are reaching out to, not just providing something, but providing perhaps some kind of relationships. And I want to be thankful that we still are enriching the ministries we already have. Urban Ministry provides food. Stop Hunger Now, which we had last Sunday, packaging food for the hungry. The Wake Interfaith Hospitality Network that provides shelter for those without a place to be, a place to live. Our Appalachian Service Project, our youth went to in the summertime. So many areas that we are already engaged in. And one thing I want to share with you this morning, and I'll conclude in a couple seconds, is over the last year and a half, a group of clergy we've been meeting. We're called, it's the Heart of Cary. If you're familiar with Cary, the area inside of Maynard is considered the Heart of Cary. And there are lots of changes and development going on in that area. And we, the clergy of parishes in the Heart of Cary, have been meeting for the last year and a half, trying to see how can we, as communities of faith, be part of supporting and helping this transition and this change in our community. We've met with the mayor a couple times. We've met with leaders of different organizations. And one of the things we've decided to do in Lent, when Lent comes up next in 2014, we're going to have all the parishes together have a program of education and fellowship, and the topic, the focus, is going to be on poverty in our area. I was told the other day that, and I had this number corrected earlier, that in Wake County, in the Wake County School District, if you were to look up how many children list where they live, there are over 2,000 who list their place of residence as homeless in Wake County. And we're looking to find ways in our own community, even here in Cary, how can we help those who are in difficult situations and difficult times? So really, really looking forward to that beginning of relationships with our communities as we look to engage with that. And finally, two things and I'll finalize. It's amazing that in 2014, we will have been in this building for 10 years. 10 years. It's like our 10th anniversary is coming up in April. And as I said, this building was built on a dream and a vision, and we're continuing to be invited to live and dream into that vision and continue to expand. And the Memorial Garden is going to be expanding as well in 2014. We're looking to build a columbarium as well. In other words, the Memorial Garden, people's remains are buried in the ground. Columbarium will be a wall that's being built where remains can be put into a niche, as it's referred to. So we're looking to do that next year. And next Sunday, there'll be an adult ed offering in the chapel at 10 o'clock on that expansion. I encourage you to take a look at that and be part of that. And I just want to thank all of you for all that you do here at St. Paul's. I want to thank you for your encouragement to the parish. And I also want to thank you personally for your encouragement to me. This has been a time of transition. It's been a stressful year. And it has been for me too. And I'm encouraged by your emails, your phone calls, your letters, your notes of encouragement, of saying, George, we're with you. You know, what can we do? I really want you to know how much I appreciate that as we've walked through this together. And we will continue to walk together. And I'd like to use that idea of Brian McLaren, that we are this rich parish of such gifts across the spectrum, and we need to continue to find ways to include and transcend. Include and transcend. To include all of our gifts and become who God's calling us to be. And I think our best years are ahead of us. I will be here 15 years in February. I just can't believe that. And we've had some great things we've done over those almost 15 years. I think, and I don't want to sound this like a corny phrase, but I really think the best is yet to come. And I'm here with you through this as we move forward, as we grow and develop into the vision of who God wants us to be. So I just want to thank you. And hopefully, if you have any questions or any thoughts about anything I've shared this morning, if you'd like more information or more clarity, please let me know. Email's the best way. Phone calls as well. I'll always get back to you. And I just want to thank you for all that you do here at St. Paul's.